All right, we're on. So, who are you? Where am I? What are we talking about?
All right, well, my name's Luke Hoban. I'm a program manager on the C# team, and I work on the C# compiler and the we call the core Link APIs.
Cool.
Which is some of the core technology that Link is built around.
So. Excellent. You look pretty young, man. Did you start right from college here?
Yeah, started out of college. Been around almost 3 years now.
Wow.
So, been on the C# team the whole time. Worked on a bunch of different features. On the team, so I worked on the editor portion of the team for a while, and then more recently I've been on the compiler team. So.
Excellent. So you're on the compiler team, and we're going to talk about Link.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about the link between the two.
Sure. for this version, for Orcus,
Yeah. Sort
of our big thing on the language and compiler side in the C# team is focused on Link and enabling all the scenarios for Link, which is obviously language integrated query.
Sure.
And so... The language has evolved in a few different ways to make that story a bit better. And you know, for folks who have played around with the Link CTPs and things, they've seen sort of that some of these new language features really enable doing a lot of cool new querying against all these different sorts of data. So,
sure.
So what we're trying to do is basically take the language features that are being developed to make this easier and put those into the C# compiler that's going to be part of Orcus.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And specifically, like, for example, in Link, or, you know, the new language syntax you guys enabled, like the var keyword.
Yeah.
The compiler is going to know that what the object is going to be at compile time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, so yes. Things like the var keyword are sort of one of the features, probably a half dozen features that really enable Link. And var is one where it lets you just not have the type explicitly in your code, but the compiler understands what type is really there.
Sure.
And is going to just basically place that type inside there. So the compiler actually is doing a lot more sort of heavy lifting behind the scenes now than it has in a lot of previous versions. We're actually sort of doing some manipulation and understanding behind the scenes that you don't really have to, the user doesn't have to deal with anymore. So.
Absolutely. Now, of course, VB.net, which is another great language, is also has support for
Absolutely.
Link. So when you guys, do you work with their compiler team?
We do. We work a lot. But the language design level, there's a lot of interaction. And at the compiler level, we share a lot of ideas and even a lot of sort of people from their team coming over and looking at what we're doing. And, you know, they're in all the hallways right around here. We're actually surrounded by VB guys on two sides here. So,
and you guys all get along, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sort of there's a little bit of joking rivalry every now and then. But by and large, you know, everyone gets along. It's a good working partnership. So.
Fantastic. Yeah. So we've had a fair amount of coverage of Link on Channel 9.
Yeah.
What are some of these new things that are going to come out with the February CTP? Like, what's different between what devs are playing with today, for example?
The big new thing, I would say, is that we've integrated Link into Visual Studio and into the .NET framework.
Nice.
In the previous versions that we've released before the Orcus CTPs, Link was really sort of an add-on that you just sort of sat on top of WIDB. And we've spent a lot of time getting everything integrated in so that it's really all, you know, part of the real, you know, part of VS Orcus and part of the .NET framework, what we're calling version 3.5, which is this thing after .NET 3.0. And so a lot of the changes people will see are just an aspect of moving it in to these release vehicles. But we've also added a bunch of new features and sort of solidified our foundation, I guess. Done a bunch of, you know, a bunch more testing than we did on the CTPs back that ran on top of WIDB.
Sure.
Found a bunch of bugs, fixed them. The compiler is now a lot more robust, can scale to sort of a lot more situations, and is just more correct. In some corner cases that we missed in the previous CTPs. So.
Now, did you get a lot of good customer feedback for the
Definitely.
Early releases?
A ton of the bugs that we found in the CTPs, the previous CTPs that ran on WIDB, was through customer feedback. Because, like I said, we didn't have a ton of testing on those CTPs.
Sure.
So, you know, we got a lot of good feedback from the community, and we've had a ton of people using those CTPs, which is obviously great.
Excellent. Now, let's be honest. I mean, like, what are devs, what's the kind of feedback are you getting from devs? I mean, you have this grand vision of unifying the two models.
The feedback so far has been incredibly positive.
I've
been pretty amazed, actually, at how positive it's been in going to some of the conferences where we were initially talking about these, going to the PDC where we first sort of announced Link. It was an amazing experience for me just because of how positive the feedback was. And, you know, as you dive, the grand vision, we get this really positive feedback on. Mm-hmm. As we dive down into details, we get like, you know, sort of, well, maybe you should have done this way, maybe you should have done that way. And that's the feedback that we really, you know, like to hear. You know,
sure.
We like to hear the grand vision is good, but getting the feedback down to the level of, you know, this feature, maybe it should have been, maybe it should work this way. Mm-hmm. And that's the stuff we can really go and, you know, try to make changes to make it what people want.
So, sure.
And that's the level we're at right now, I think.
Excellent.
Those kind of changes. So.
Cool. I mean, because you need, part of the challenge is with your language is you're actually adding functional constructs into a language that's imperative, right?
Yeah, there is a big aspect of that. And some of the, you know, some of the new ideas that people are sort of going to be faced with when they start working with Link, or some ideas that are a little bit different than, you know, what they may have seen before.
Sure.
And you know, when you first start using Link, a lot of it's, you know, it's pretty simple, I think, to get started.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a couple of ideas that, you know, you sort of want to get in your head as you keep going, and so we're trying to, you know, make sure that we make those concepts easy to grasp, as easy as possible, so that people can really get a deep understanding of Link as quickly as possible using our tools. So we're adding some features to
sure.
the IDE to make it easier to learn those things, and also through sort of documentation and, you know, white papers and things like that. So,
cool. I imagine one of those tools might be something like right-click, add data source.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, we're going to have things like, you know, add new item, and then you can add a, you know, link to a SQL
cool.
data connection and things, and try to make that workflow very simple. And that's, you know, that's some features with the Link to SQL team, for instance, is just down the hall, and
mm-hmm.
you know, they're working hard on what that experience is going to be like for walking through. And also, I mean, even really sort of what seem like simpler features like
yeah.
IntelliSense.
Excellent.
IntelliSense is a hugely useful tool for understanding and learning how APIs work and how new sorts of programming models and things work.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the big things we've invested in Orcus has been to make IntelliSense really work well with all these new language constructs and with Link in general.
Sure.
And that's actually been quite a bit of work for our teams, because
mm-hmm.
our IntelliSense previously really didn't scale to these kind of complex things. There's a lot going on behind the scenes, like I mentioned, and
mm-hmm.
A lot of that stuff that was going on behind the scenes really confused our old implementation of IntelliSense.
Okay.
So we've had to sort of build it up in a slightly different way.
Interesting.
For Orcus, but the end result is that now you can really get IntelliSense all through our queries, all throughout all of these new language constructs.
So now, are you saying, I mean, VB, for example, in their IDE,
yeah.
have always had background compilation.
Yeah.
So are you saying that C# is doing more background compilation, or what's going on?
We're certainly getting a bit closer.
Okay.
You know, we wouldn't say we're doing background compilation. That's not where we are right now, but what we're doing now, we are using the compiler itself to get IntelliSense information, so we have full fidelity, we know everything.
Okay.
Before, we were sort of using this other technology that didn't have all of the information that the compiler had, and so it didn't, you know, there were sometimes where complex expressions and things could sort of go outside of the scope of what it could understand.
Cool.
But now we're really using the compiler itself and feeding that information into IntelliSense, and so we expect to be able to give you the most accurate information possible, and also in the most wide variety of situations you can imagine.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So more integration with the compiler. That's
definitely
as opposed to background compilation.
Yeah, and that's sort of a big
Great.
Move I think that we're seeing, you know, on our team as well, is a bit more integration between what's going on in the editor space and what's going on in the compiler space. So.
Excellent. I mean, in the end, the tools are what you developers use. So,
yep.
And that's
absolutely
productivity.
Yeah, and we, you know, productivity both for end users and for ourselves. If we can reuse our implementation of the compiler
mm-hmm.
for both our IntelliSense services and for the compiler itself, that saves us the time of having to write two different versions, one for understanding at a compile time and one at design time. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, well, so this is great. We've done a little hand waving, which
yeah.
is always important. We've got to meet
yeah.
you.
Sure.
And let's take a look at some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Huh?
Definitely.
And then go ahead and describe
All
what
right.
you're doing. And
well, I'll go ahead and just start with creating a brand new app here to show you some of what the workflow looks like just getting into VS Orcus.
Okay.
So, you know, pretty much a lot of the UI is still the same in VS Orcus. We haven't gone and radically changed things from WIDB. But you may notice some rounded curves and some minor things that change like that. But I'll just go and create. Uh-oh. All right, well, it looks like something
That never fails.
Templates, yeah. Well, let me just see if I can open up one of these old console applications.
There you go. Well, I mean, this is a CTP in the end.
So yeah, this is a CTP, so.
That's what it's all about.
Yep. Hopefully this won't be people's experience.
That's fine.
Yep.
Now this is running on Vista.
Yep, this is running on Vista.
So it has the fixes for...
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, we've done, in Orcas itself, we've done a few fixes specifically for Vista to make Vista support for VS a bit better. A lot of us, almost all of us, I think, around here are using Vista, when running VS on Vista.
Sure.
So we're running into the problems and we're fixing them. And
great. Let's focus in here so get somewhat of a good experience for people. Oh, I know that sound. Windows Mobile.
Yeah. So, let me see if I can open up another one here.
Okay. Never fails.
Yeah, it never fails.
You know, it happens pretty much almost every time.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
I mean, it shows that these are really raw bits, right?
Yeah.
These are bleeding edge. I mean, this is like today's stuff. So.
Cool. So that's, you get some code spit.
Yeah. Let me get rid of this stuff because I'll go ahead and just sort of rewrite some of this to show you what we're doing here.
Zoom on in there. All right.
So, if I'd succeeded in the first time around in just creating a new console application, this is sort of where I would have ended up. One of the interesting things you'll see is in my references, when I created a new project, it automatically had this reference to system.core.
Okay.
So system.core, for those of you who've used the previous CTPs and seen system.query, was the assembly that had a lot of the core link types in it.
Okay.
Now that's all been integrated into the system.core assembly, which is part of the .NET framework version 3.5. And if I go ahead and look at what's in system.core, you see that there's a whole, a whole bunch of new stuff that's going on in here, not just link. We've got some new technologies that the CLR BCL team is adding.
Fantastic.
But the link assemblies, we have the two namespaces, system.link and system.link.expressions. So these have been renamed a little bit from, I think these were system.query back in the previous CTP bits.
Okay.
And then, we've got all our query operators, in here, so. So it's one of the, like I mentioned earlier, one of the big things we've done is moved a lot of this link stuff into the core .NET framework.
Excellent. So it's just part of the BCL now.
It's just part of the BCL. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So if I go ahead and start using that, I can just show you what it's like to write a simple query now in Orcas and show you some of the differences between what it was like in previous CTPs.
Okay.
So one of the things, let me retype that and actually I can show you something. One of the first cool thing.
Nice.
You see that in IntelliSense there, completion list came up and from is in the completion list. So
cool.
If you're ever sort of worrying about whether or not you're writing your query in the exact right format, you can use IntelliSense as a guideline for,
So if I were to write where first, then
so
it wouldn't work,
right? Here.
Oh.
There's no where in the completion list
totally.
There, so it
nice.
Sort of lets you know that that's not going to be the...
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that saved me on a bunch of occasions. I'll show you one place later where that always gets me. So from M in, and I'll do sort of one of our simple demos here is to go and sort of do reflection and get back all the methods on a type. And so the
cool.
type I'll pick here is enumerable. And I just showed a few minutes ago in the object browser, this enumerable type actually has all the query operators on it that are part of the link pattern.
Okay.
So if I get the methods on here. So now I'm iterating over all of the methods that are on this, so all of the query operator methods.
From
so
M.
We'll get to.
Excellent.
And let me just write a simple query. So I'll write where m.isStatic, because I know that all the methods that I care about on this type are static extension methods. And I'll select the name.
Nice.
So this is sort of just your canonical link query. And so if I look at get methods, I can see that its return type is an array of these method infos. And so it's an array, so it's something I can query over. Using
Fantastic.
Link. In this simple query, one of the things I should show, actually, I'll retype this piece right here. This is a really important thing that we've added, like I mentioned, IntelliSense support, is that I can now get IntelliSense on this query variable m when I'm inside writing my query. And that's something we didn't have, you know, back in the older CTPs. And as you start using this, you really see how much it helps to be able to get that information right up front.
That's excellent.
And this is really one of the big benefits of Link even as a whole, is the idea that this is a strongly typed query language. It's part of C#. It's not just some, you know, domain-specific language that doesn't really understand the type system that you're using. And so you can get things like IntelliSense at design time. And those are some of the really big benefits of Link over alternate sort of query technologies.
Fantastic.
Having IntelliSense here really sort of brings that through.
Totally, and it really helps for the case when you're working against an unknown sort of data source.
Yeah, definitely.
Or as a developer.
I mean, in this case, you know, maybe people know method infos, maybe people don't. But but certainly, when you're coding against a database, and you know,
sure,
about 20 columns or 30 columns. And
yeah, you might. The point is, you might not know what all the column names are.
Exactly.
Right? Like, is static is a property. As far as I'm concerned, that's a column name.
Definitely.
Right? I mean, it's a row value or something.
Yeah. And that's exactly what, you know, IntelliSense
Perfect.
Will give you here, is it'll let you get that information about whatever data source you're writing against. You can get the information. And you see here that, you know, we're doing a lot of, you know, what we call type inference. So the types aren't as explicit. And so IntelliSense is even more useful now, because there was nowhere here where I said what type M was.
Mm-hmm.
So as a developer, to sort of remind me of that information as much as possible as I'm writing my code, IntelliSense is going to give me the information.
So now, when you say type inference, I mean, you're saying from M in. So
yep.
I'm assuming that the in keyword sort of lets the compiler know that it's about to be given a type to infer from.
Yeah,
yes?
Definitely. This, you know, this variable M, I didn't declare its type here, but its type will be inferred from whatever this is. And so in this case, I mentioned that I showed that the get methods returns an array of method infos,
yeah.
So M will be inferred to be something of type method info.
Cool.
But even though that isn't explicit, IntelliSense is going to help me to understand when I type dot after M, it'll show me the members.
Which is awesome, because C# developers, or Visual Studio developers anyway, are used to this kind of stuff.
Definitely.
IntelliSense is so helpful.
Yeah, it was certainly by far the biggest piece of feedback we got on the previous CTPs was, you know, where's IntelliSense?
Yeah.
Awesome. It keeps going away in all these different scenarios. It's something that, you know, we know Visual Studio developers just absolutely depend on, and so it was a real priority to make sure that worked here.
It's super cool, man.
So I'll write just a simple loop to go and look at the results of this. So I'm using snippets. I don't know how many people out there have used snippets technology that was part of WIDBI, but I find these things to be pretty useful.
Absolutely.
So let me compile this. All right. And I'll run this. So we see the result of doing this was to basically give me, you know, just a big long list of all of the query operators that exist in as part of Link. And so you can sort of see here that there's things like sum and, you know,
mm-hmm.
average. And so every query operator exists on this enumerable type.
Now, that sample brings up an interesting point. I mean, is there a way for me to declare to be distinct?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So
because I saw sums, lots of sums, I might only be interested in...
Yeah.
You know, obviously I realize why that's happening, but
yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Well, one of the interesting things I can do here is I can say, you know, group M by M.name into G. And so this will take all those groups where the names are all the same, so I don't really care about having 10 different results.
Yeah.
And I can put them into a group variable called G. Then I'll need to change what I select, because now I'm sort of working with G instead of with the individual M's. But I can select out, you know, G.key, because it's the key that I grouped on, it's the name. So if I run this now, you'll see I only get one of each thing.
Fantastic.
They're all grouped up. But I guess that's not even, you know, since I grouped them, there's more useful information that I could give than just the key.
Mm-hmm.
So I could do something like anonymous. This is using anonymous types. It's one of our new language features. But
mm-hmm.
I could say I'm going to project into a type which has a method name. That'll be the key. And has an overloads. And I'll give that g.count. So that's the group of, G is now the group of things
cool.
that have
I
the
mean,
same name.
But that's a very important line. Let's talk about
Definitely.
That line of code. You mentioned this new anonymous methods, which were actually new already in 2.0.
Yeah, well, this feature here is actually anonymous types.
Anonymous types.
Yeah. So it's the ability to essentially, instead of writing new, you know, normally I'd write sort of new list or something like that, right?
Got it.
But if I don't put anything here, if I just sort of leave it empty, and then I tell it sort of what the pattern of this type should be. And the pattern should be that it has a
property named method name, and here's the value I want to give it, and it has a property named overloads. And the C# compiler will go back behind the scenes and create a type for you that, that represents this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is sort of, again, with that type inference and things, you don't have to be able to explicitly say its name. And this is sort of something that people who use SQL are used to, right? Because when you project in SQL, you just tell it what columns to project out.
Sure.
And so here we're providing some of that same sort of capability. These types, you know, are normally not things that you really want to have to deal with because,
mm-hmm.
you know, you want to just project out the method name and the overloads. You don't want to have to go out and write a whole other type for this. And so we try to make it pretty easy for you to do that here.
That is really, really cool. Yeah. I mean, of course, you're not going to actually use it somewhere else later on in your code.
Yeah. Well,
right.
I'll show
you
actually
though,
how you use it. For instance, in this case, when I do a for each over this later,
mm-hmm.
each one of these items is an instance of that anonymous type.
Mm.
So again, if I type dot, you know, we're working with this anonymous type, and you'll see that it has the method name property there, so I get IntelliSense helps me understand what type that really was. And you see it mentions that this thing was an anonymous type. Can't tell you what type it was that it's
sure.
accessing, because it's not something that has a name. But, you know, IntelliSense is giving me information about what the sort of type is that I'm working with here.
Cool.
So.
And it looks like implicitly it's derived from object.
Yeah,
right?
It's derived from object.
Like everything.
Yeah, like everything. But it does actually have its own implementations of equals and get hash code.
Mm.
And that's really important because it lets you store it into dictionaries and things like that, which is a common use case actually for the results of these projections and things.
Very cool. Really cool.
So, yeah, so you know, right here I projected out two pieces of information, the name and the number of overloads that
mm-hmm.
are associated with that thing. And so if I run this, we see now that we get a bit more information because we get you know each one of the methods and then you know like the where method. Well, these aren't alphabetized, but the where method you know has two overloads, so I can get that piece of information. So this is you know I'm sort of massaging the information into a format that I sort of think is really something I can consume.
Totally cool, and you know, hey, you're writing code.
Yeah,
right. You're not writing SQL statements.
Yeah, and I think that's really important because when people first see this, they're like, oh, that's that SQL language that you guys put into the C#, and that isn't really quite what we did. I mean,
yeah.
Really what we're doing here is extending C# to be able to express some of the similar ideas that SQL can express.
Mm-hmm.
But really, this is still C#. And this query language, I mean, most of the code that I've written in this query is just C# expressions. I mean, this piece right here could be any C# expression that I want to put there.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing SQL I know about it. This is really C#. And there's just a few of these keywords that we're using to shape the expression.
Sure.
To remind you of how they relate to what you might know from SQL or from other query languages.
Sure. I mean, well, I mean, the notion of group by,
yep.
the notion of where, the
yep.
notion of from. But, of course, you can use this to and you just did this. I mean, you weren't going against a SQL database.
Yep.
You're going against reflection information.
Yeah.
So.
And I think that's one of the real cool things about Link is that this really is about any type of data you have that you know has some sort of is in any concept a list or a set or anything like that.
Mm.
We can go and query over and we can transform over and so this kind of code here is something you could imagine having tried to write in .NET you know in C# 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you could have written it. You could have written some for loops and some. You know you could have stored the intermediate results into dictionaries to do the grouping and you know. And I've tried a few times in the past to write the samples out of you know the 40 lines of code you would have had to write to accomplish the same thing. But we're really giving you the ability to do querying anywhere where you used to be doing querying and transformation in your code. You can probably use Link to express it in a more compact and sort of more directly what you meant. Sort of style. So it's not just about databases, not just about XML.
Not
really about any type of data that you have and you want to query and transform over.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I guess one thing, another thing we've done that's I think really interesting in Orcus is to improve some of the debugging experience for these things.
Cool.
And that's, you know, again, learning how this stuff works, having a debugging experience really helps with that. And if you do run into problems and you know, you want to be able to debug through this. So I guess one thing I can show there is, if I remove this code, sort of a more realistic example is not to create the query and then for each over it immediately. That's sort
okay.
of, and that's what I was doing here. But realistically, you probably have a query and then you're going to go execute that and use the results of it somewhere. And so if I have something like this, one of the things that was difficult in you know some of the CTPs we had before was to understand, well, what does my query actually represent? What is the data inside it? And you know, back in our previous in WIDB and things, the debugger view was just these first four members, you know, and so that's not especially helpful.
Mm.
But we added this results view in Orcus, which is going to let you see what the values are of your query. So it's going to let you go off and actually execute the query and get back the results and see what they are.
Excellent.
So if I expand this, I can see, you know, there was similar to what I got when I did the console.write lines, but
mm-hmm.
now I don't have to printf debugging. You know, I can actually do it inside the debugger.
Very cool.
So I can see the all the different members here, and for each one I can go and look at the different properties on that anonymous type. And now that I'm doing, now that I'm presenting it in this way, you can also sort of see that I'm projecting out the number of overloads here.
Mm-hmm.
But probably more useful is to project out all of the actual overloads themselves. So not just the count, but you know, what are those method infos that were part of that group? And so I can sort of this. So I am projecting out my overloads. It's going to be the whole list of this group.
Okay.
Now if I rerun this and look in the debugger again, I can see that my overloads now is it says count equals 4, but it's got a plus sign, so I can go and drill down and see each one of the overloads.
Okay.
So each one of these is the method infos that had the name, I guess in this case, to lookup.
Excellent.
So you know, now this is a sort of really useful idea just in the query sense, that I can do these hierarchical queries,
mm-hmm.
Where the results of my query were actually included some lists, and I could actually go in and transform this list itself using
mm-hmm.
some more queries if I wanted to. But then you can see in the debugger we can go and look at and see those results. So
very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess one interesting other thing in the debugging space is the stepping behavior and how we can step through the execution of this program. And like we mentioned, there's sort of a couple of new ideas that play a big part in Link.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those is this idea of deferred execution, which is that these queries aren't really being executed immediately when you type this. So when you execute this line here, it's not actually going off and executing the query. It's just creating something that can go and execute the query.
Okay.
And the result won't actually, the results of executing that query won't be evaluated until you try to use it. So this is one of the new concepts that underlies a lot of what we're doing with Link.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, for some people that can be, you know, it's a bit different than what some of the APIs they've used in the past do. But by making the debugger stepping behavior really a bit transparent, I think we're going to help people to understand that a bit quicker.
No, I mean, which brings up an interesting point. I mean, if I'm writing Link queries typically, for the average developer, most of us, we work against SQL, some sort of structured
yep.
database
yep.
Out somewhere.
Yep.
So what you're saying is I'll write my queries, and clearly what you're going to have to do is then create a language that the database is going to understand, correct?
Yeah, definitely. And there's sort of these two interesting implementations of Link that we have internally that underlie this. And in the user, sort of in the syntax that you use to write both those type of queries, they look
mm-hmm.
the same. But in this case, I was querying against something that was an in-memory data structure. It was just this array of method infos. And so that whole query there got transformed into IL and was just executed right off the bat. So pretty straightforward. But in the case of Link to SQL or some of the other technologies that do go and run these queries in some
mm-hmm.
external environment,
mm-hmm.
They actually go and grab all this information here and stick it into these things we call expression trees, which can represent the syntax that you wrote your query in. And once they've got those data structures, they can go and figure out how to convert them into SQL and
mm-hmm.
execute them in that remote environment and bring the results back. And so being able to sort of do both of those and compose them easily
mm-hmm.
is what motivates a lot of this idea of deferred execution.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
I mean, you're going to have to do the same against XML.
Definitely.
Same against
yeah.
any structured data.
Yeah.
But it does bring up the question of how does the compiler know, for example, that you're going to be hitting it, that you need to speak SQL?
Yeah. Well, it's really actually very simple in the end. It's just whatever type this guy has, the source of your from statement, whatever type that thing is,
mm-hmm.
will determine what type, what kind of query to do. So in this case, it was just an array.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything is just enumerable, then it will go and do it as this in-memory query and just transform it using that. If the thing is, in the case of Link to SQL,
mm-hmm.
We have a thing called data table.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the type. And data table itself has its own implementation of the query operators. And so when the compiler sees that, it goes and implements this query by calling the query operators on the data table class. And those query operators, you know, build up this data structure and figure out how to go and remote it off to the database and things.
Super so, cool.
Yeah, and users out there, you know, this is very extensible, so anyone who wants to build their own sort of remote execution of queries in their own personal database, their own personal environment, can just implement these query operators that we saw and implement them in the way that makes sense for their domain and just plug in. Just
so one of the things, I mean, these are mainly, you know, I'm looking, this is mainly just read.
Yeah.
So what about, you know, we like to write to databases as well. Can I write to databases easily?
Yeah, definitely. The writing to databases uses sort of, I guess, one of the common patterns in object relational mappings, which is, you know, you can just, you can query, you can get the results back, and then you have the data structure.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you change the values in that data structure, then you can just commit it in the object relational layer, in this case, linked to SQL or linked to entities or one of these technologies, or keep track of what changes you've made, what data you got out of the database. And so when you tell it to commit, it'll go and, you know, make all the updates and things in the database.
Very cool.
In the case of in-memory, you know, queries, the write operation is, I mean, you've got the actual objects themselves, so the write operation is just, you know, change the objects. So it's you're sort of less, it's more straightforward, I guess, in this case, just because everything's in memory, so there's no, you don't have to go and have that communication with some external party. But in linked to SQL, it's, you know, it's still the same sort of pretty straightforward process of just editing the data that you get back.
Cool. I mean, it could be any object. Object relational database, so you know, link to Oracle, link
definitely.
To whatever.
Yeah, cool. Anyone out there who wants to build, you know, build their own link to my my thing, and we've actually seen a lot of interest out there from, you know, individuals and others to build interesting implementations of link over their own things. I think there's a cool sample out there that someone's built about link to Amazon, which goes and, you know, writes queries, and you can remote them off to execute in the Amazon using the Amazon Web Services.
Outstanding.
I think that's just really cool stuff, and
absolutely.
It's great that people out there are, you know, building all these things. So.
Totally.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep.
So what else is going on? What else is new here?
Yeah.
Anything
else? Well, let me show you the stepping behavior
really
quickly, since that's one of the new things. So I guess I'll just step into my application. So I'll hit F11 here.
Okay.
Just walk through here, and this will sort of show you what the execution flow is like for one of these queries.
Okay.
So, you know, I hit this statement here that's going to assign, create this query. And you see I've stepped over it, but like I mentioned, I haven't yet executed the various pieces of it. So things like this expression where I check whether the thing's static, that piece of code hasn't executed yet.
Okay.
And we'll see in a second when it does execute. So then we step through sort of what the for each does. Now you see I go in and I actually jumped from down here up to here.
Okay.
And that's because this piece of code is now being executed a bit later, now that I tried to get the values out of my query. And I tried to ask, you know, I did for each over it, so I'm asking what values are in there. And as it tries to get the values out, it goes and executes the code that describes the query. So this is sort of a really interesting idea, and the fact that the stepping can show you that now is going to be really helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense, of course, why it's doing what it is in that order.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you ever have sort of confusion about why something's executing, why something hasn't executed yet, or you can use the stepper. You can also set breakpoints and things in here, so you can tell it to stop every time it hits one of these expressions. And you know, if you want to see every what things am I actually ending up filtering over here in my where clause, you can set a breakpoint there and look at the state as it's doing the query.
So, super, super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty much what I, you know, have as far as some demos here.
Very cool. So let's talk a little bit about lambda expressions.
Sure, yeah.
And those are also new, and clearly they're important for
definitely.
Link.
Yeah, very important. And it's interesting, I mean, the code I wrote here didn't use lambdas directly, but it definitely depended on sort of the concept of lambdas very heavily beneath the scenes. And, well, let me actually use the whiteboard here, and I'll show some examples.
Excellent.
So lambdas are very similar to what we had in C# 2.0 with anonymous methods. They're a sort of extension of the same concept. And they let you just write, if I have a method, they let me write a little sort of function in line. So I can say, so that's a pretty simple little lambda there.
Cool.
So the first guy here is the type, which is a delegate. And these types called func or something that we've added in this release, and they're sort of a way of describing delegates which have this particular signature. So in this case, it's a function which takes an int and returns an int.
Okay.
That's why it's called func of int.
Sure. Well, lambda expressions are just functions, really.
Yeah, they're exactly just functions. And so the thing I'm trying to, the variable I'm trying to create here is just a variable which represents this function.
Okay.
And this function is going to be something of type. It's function, some function that takes an int and returns an int.
Okay.
So this is the name. Actually, let me rewrite this and say add one to make it a little more clear, since that's what my function does. And so, you know, it takes in an n, and this is the parameter
mm-hmm.
to my function, and it returns n plus 1. So I just described here sort of what how the function is going to work.
Cool.
And I could write any C-sharp expression I want here. I could take n, and I could multiply it. I could square it, n times n.
Sure.
And this just lets me define this function right here in line. And so this arrow, the equals greater than.
Equals greater than.
That's what indicates that we're using a lambda expression there, and the parameters go on the left-hand side of it, and the body of the method basically goes, the body of the function goes on the right-hand side.
And it's basically saying, just do this.
Yeah,
the
it's
inputs.
Saying, take an input, call it n,
uh-huh.
And it'll infer the type of what this thing should be from the signature over here.
Uh-huh.
And it says, just do whatever operations on the right to it. And so, pretty simple. Pretty
yeah,
simple.
Well, very cool.
Yeah.
All right, now let's use it.
Yeah. So I can write, add 1 of 7. Now let me say int k equals.
Mm-hmm.
And so this will go, and, this add 1 is now a delegate.
Okay.
And so this code here will exist somewhere. And I can go and just execute it and pass it in an argument. Since the function takes an int and returns an int, I can pass it 7, and it'll give me back some integer. And if I go and run this code and look at it in the debugger,
mm-hmm.
k should be 8.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty simple to use again there.
Mm-hmm.
You can just call it as though it was a function, even though it sort of looks like it's just a local variable.
Mm-hmm.
We've extended this, and C# has always had the concept of delegates. So it's always been the case that a local variable or field or something can store a piece of information which is a function by having its type be a delegate type.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're sort of making that a bit easier to use.
Excellent.
And so, yeah, so lambdas are pretty important in essence because the kind of queries that I was showing earlier
mm-hmm.
can be written in the same way. So if I have an array of integers and I want to query over it, so if I have an array of integers in query syntax, I would write a query something like, from I in ints select I times I, right?
Okay.
That'd be a simple query I could have written using the query syntax. But if I want to write this, sort of what the compiler is doing behind the scenes, and an alternate way I could write this is to say, ints dot select I goes to I times I. And so this is one of these query methods that we showed, that I was showing earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a method that will go off and do the operation of selecting out, projecting basically, I times I for each element I inside my ints.
Okay.
So this is the alternate way of writing it, and is really what the compiler is changing this into behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
and changing it into this. And there's a lot of cases where people will want to write their code like this.
Certainly.
Anyway, because we have a bunch of query operators that don't have an explicit form that works in C# at least in these query syntax.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some more complex type of querying you can do using this kind of syntax. So yeah, this is what it'll get transformed into, and this is what how lambdas get used for that.
Very cool.
I guess one of the motivations for having them here is that they let you put these little pieces of code like this.
Mm-hmm.
When you're writing a projection, you really want to be able to describe what to project out. And so in this case, I want to project out, the square of I. And so lambdas give you the ability to express a little, what do I want to project out? I can express that concept in line here
mm-hmm.
and pass it as a function to my select method, which will go and do that projection. So,
very cool.
Yeah, pretty fundamental technology for link here.
Absolutely, and it could be used in many ways.
Absolutely, and this is another one we've seen, it's sort of we introduced it to as one of the things to make link a bit easier, but it's a very general purpose technology, something that we've seen people using for all kinds of things already, and presumably we're going to see a lot more of that as time goes on, people finding interesting ways of leveraging some of these constructs, which have been popular for a long time in a lot of other languages, in some functional languages.
Absolutely.
And also in a lot of those sort of really popular scripting languages and things like Python and those guys. So, yeah.
Very cool. Well, it's glad to see C# adopting this stuff. It's important.
Yeah.
I mean, for one of the reasons, obviously, with functional languages, the compiler can have an easier time trying to understand side effects of potential operations, and will help us be write better code.
Definitely. Here, one of the things you're probably, when you're writing code like this, you're probably not going to be doing a lot of side effect computation, because it won't be as meaningful. It'll be a little bit harder to work with in a meaningful way. But these let you avoid the pieces of code where you needed to do that. So you don't have to write your for loop, in this case, that would go over and project. You don't have to mention that iteration variable. You don't have to constantly update it. And since that sort of isn't a concept that's really fundamental to how this thing works, we're letting you now write this a bit more declaratively, I guess.
Cool.
We're letting you say what you want. You want to select out, you know, the square of each element of the ints. We're not telling you to go and introduce an iteration variable and increment it each time. So.
Excellent. Well, Windows Mobile, huh?
Yeah,
reminding
Windows
you of yet another meeting.
Yeah.
I got the same phone. Those are great phones.
Oh, it is a great phone. Yeah, I'm really liking this one.
Me too.
Yeah.
Star Trek.
Yep.
Just want to update the software.
Yeah.
Get a later build. But this is really cool.
Yeah.
And I know I've learned a lot today.
Great.
Anything else you want to get out there about the CTP?
Not much. We have the January CTP, I guess, is out right now.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff I was showing today isn't in there, but everything I was showing today will be in the February CTP, which should be coming out in the middle or end of February.
Excellent.
We're getting to a point where all this stuff is into Orcus, and you know, Visual Studio Orcus has Link as a fully integrated component. So from now on, every Orca CTP in beta will have a fully functional Link experience.
That is really awesome.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Cool. Well, hey, it was great to meet you.
Yeah, great.
And thank you for your time.
Definitely. Thanks.